The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Very experienced at last year with Cork. They were complacent. Their game plan was set up to prepare for another team, as if they were playing Dublin. That's coming from the coaches. So don't talk about they weren't complacent. They were.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
The Off the Ball Podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
All right, we are less than a month out from the Tokyo Olympics. They are definitely happening, and I'm delighted to be joined by one of the Irish athletes that's going to be there. Triathlete, Carolyn Hayes is with me. How are you keeping, Carolyn?
Hello, Nathan. How are you doing?
I'm well. So it's finally been confirmed in the last few days that what you knew for quite a while, you are going to be an Olympian.
Oh, thank God is the first reaction. It's brilliant. I'm just, can't quite believe it. Well, I can, but I can't if you get me, like, wow, a bit of a roller coaster, you know, between the, will they or won't they go ahead, and then they're going ahead and they're not going ahead, and then global pandemic, COVID, no racing. To actually see my name in black and white and know I have a ticket to Tokyo. It's incredible. It's thrilled.
I remember talking to the swimmer, Gary O'Toole, before, and I introduced him as former Olympian, and he stopped me and said, there's no such thing as a former Olympian. Once you're an Olympian, you're always an Olympian. So you'll always have that, regardless of what happens.
I like that. I'll use that. And someone was saying on the news yesterday, someone was giving out, you know, about all the vaccinations and stuff, but it's only 0.01% of the population, I think, are Olympians. Like, that's pretty mind blown.
Yeah, it's the elite of the elite of the elite. Yeah. When did you first dream of being an Olympian?
I think when I was a kid, we all remember watching Sonia running around and being in primary school and then wheeling in the old TVs, you know, can you run down to Ranga Cahir and bring in the video? So that would have been one of my first Olympic memories. And then obviously watching Michelle Smith swimming. And I suppose for me, becoming an Olympian, I guess I never thought I'd be good enough, would be the truth. Like, I always just dreamt of being a doctor, and I was happy with that. And then I started doing triathlon, and you know, anything I do, I want to kind of be at the pointy end. So even when I joined my training group, Hup, and my coach, Aina McGrath, said, you know, like, what do you hope to do? And I said, well, whatever I decide on, I just want to try be the best at it, or, you know, be as good as I can be. So when we started racing, you know, the Olympics was always, you know, in the back of my mind, I'd love to go there. And then when I started to get, you know, results, or, you know, map out a plan, I was like, yeah, I want to go there. So yeah, I think I've always wanted it, and maybe now I just believe in it a bit more. So yeah.
Yeah. You're obviously one of these people who is a natural athlete. You played a lot of sports. I saw when you did your first marathon, you were expecting to do the sort of usual first marathon run of four and a half hours, and you did it in just over 3 hours. So the fact that when you start triathlon, even then at the back of your mind is, would my going to the Olympics shows there's a high achiever in there, and it ain't hiding.
Oh, you'd make me laugh talking about that marathon, because I remember ringing my mother when I crossed the finish line. Love, you're finished. And I was like, yeah. She's like, did you cut it short? Nothing like family to keep you grounded. So, definitely. Yeah, I do. And I'm also a twin. So, you know, you're going to be competitive when you have a twin, because you're fighting for airspace. But I suppose I'm lucky.
Yeah, so you're a twin and you're the youngest of five. So there's been a gigantic chip on your shoulder ever since you were born, basically.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, always fighting for airtime.
Yeah. And is that where that competitiveness comes from, and that interest in sport has come from? Just around the house, older brothers been a part of it, been in the middle of it? That, you know, because we're always wondering about how you get more girls into sport. Were you always treated by your parents the same way as the lads were in terms of the opportunities that were given to you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think when you come towards the end and you've had three older brothers, like, boys are messers the rest of the time. So there wasn't a high bar to be following in But yeah, I always just wanted to be cool enough and good enough to be able to play with my brothers, and I guess not be an embarrassment. And I think we would have been really big in our house. My dad would have played rugby, and he actually would have swam as well. And he's super competitive. Like, you couldn't play a game of snap with him because, like, he was going to beat you or chop the hand off you. And then with my brothers, they played rugby. So, you know, you'd go along to their matches and watch them. And then eventually you'd pick up a ball and, you know, start playing. And then primary school, you know, went to great school, Scolador, and there was loads of opportunities to do sport. We had a great principal. So, like, you did the usual camogie, like Gaelic football. And then when I went to secondary school, I suppose I was a bit devastated because there was no sports bar hockey. So I had no clue what hockey was. And if you wanted to get out of class and, you know, have half days and Wednesdays, you had to learn pretty quick how to play hockey.
Mm.
Home environment definitely is a competitive but healthy competitiveness. Like, even stupid things like who can eat their dinner the fastest, you'd have to win. Or we grew up over my dad had a local supermarket, so like you'd be sent down to get your brothers a can of Coke and they'd be like, I'll time you, and you're like, you'd be sprinting. And sure, your brothers are not timing you, like you come in and they're probably on 9.5, 10. So yeah, definitely home environment brought a competitive side in me.
Yeah, like things have improved, I presume, in the last 20 years in terms of the sports that have been offered to young girls. But you do wonder how many we have lost out on when, as you say, you had such a passion in your primary school years for so many sports. And then when you make that step up to secondary school, it's, well, actually, probably got all this stuff for the boys in their school. But for the girls, if you want to play hockey, you can play that. But actually, maybe most don't even want to do that. And we're fine with it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of the time girls, you know, if you go from a mixed school to maybe an all-girls secondary school, there's a high emphasis on academics and, you know, academic achievements. You know, the girls, well, she's not very sporty, but, you know, she's really good at, say, music, or she's really talented at art. And like, those things are awesome, but they're not really, you know, given the same merit. And I mean, I remember being told that, you know, you should probably cut back on some of the sports and, you know, put your head down and focus. But like, that wasn't coming from the home. Like, our parents were amazing. I remember, you know, you'd be told to stop studying to come down and watch the Champions League, or like, you know,
wow,
just take a break. Or if Munster were playing at the weekend, like, and like, I suppose we never gave our parents any trouble. But I think the combining the academics with sport needs to be looked at a bit more for females. And even when you think about like sports scholarships and what's on offer, like there's always like way more sports scholarship for men. So maybe that encourages them to keep up sport in secondary school a bit more, because if they combine the sport and academic, they'll get a scholarship. Whereas female, you know, I don't know how many hockey scholarships are there, or like what's available. So yeah, definitely. I think they are improving, but a lot more can be done.
Yeah, slowly. And like when you look in America and say something like Title IX, which I think it's the 50th anniversary this year of equal funding, what it has done in terms of participation rates and scholarships and opportunities that are there. And that comes from the top, like that comes from government funding. It has to come, that sort of leadership, from the very top.
Yeah, it's massive, massive.
So when you were in secondary school then, and you're playing quite a bit of hockey and you're maybe continuing other sports outside, was being a professional sportswoman, was being a looking at scholarships, continuing on when you left school, was that something that ever entered your head?
Absolutely not. No, that was definitely not. It was not kind of a viable option, shall we say. Now my school was fantastic, and you know, like it was great, the academics and the sport. But it was an Irish school, so you know, you didn't have like a big choice of subjects or anything like that. And I guess the friends I had, you know, all of us were going to college, all of us were going to go on to third level, like there was never a question. And so if you did deviate, you know, from the norm and say, oh, I think I'm gonna go and get a sports scholarship and I'm gonna, you know, be a part-time student and, you know, part-time athlete, it just wasn't there when I was in secondary school. I think it's definitely changing now. I mean, the first time I heard about scholarships was when I was doing my graduate medicine in UL, and UL brought in the UL Sport scholarship program. And I was lucky enough, I got that scholarship in my third year of my medical degree. So like, even just to to say I got a sports scholarship, you know, that was really cool. But it wouldn't have been an option to do full-time athletics. And,
yeah. So you, what age were you when you did your first triathlon?
24, yeah.
So God, I'd imagine for I'd imagine then for say a lot of your school friends, when they look at you lining up in the Olympics in the triathlon, they're probably going, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah, definitely very different trajectories. But I think they'll have known, like, I was always into sport. Like, I was always doing some form of sport. And like, I would have swam with Limerick Swimming Club, you know, growing up, just in the evenings. Now, we didn't do any of those mad, like, 5
You didn't do the 5 a.m. start, no?
No, and I thank my parents for that. And even during the summer, like, we'd head off and go camping on our holidays, whereas the summertime for swimmers is typically, you know, their nationals, their Division One, all those big races. So you do the work throughout the year and then go off on your holidays. And I think that was great, and it really balanced things. Like, it's important, but it's not everything, if you get me. So I'm just after losing my train of thought.
Yeah, we were just talking about when you started out in triathlons. Yeah, and
yeah, so I always had the sport going on, so like my friends wouldn't be surprised. And then when I had like a shoulder operation in secondary school, so I took up running, and it was purely so I didn't get fat, like, and that's how I ended up starting to do the marathons. And I remember in the marathon someone was like, you know, what's your 10k time? I was like, I've never done a 10k. And then they're like, what's your half marathon time? I haven't done that either. And they're like, you should probably slow down. So yeah, my friends, like, I've always been driven. And even my twin, like, she's super competitive as well. So like, they won't be surprised. But they're all like working full time now, and they have like families and mortgages. And
yeah,
I suppose you're saying just keep doing it as long as you can.
So how's, maybe we need to talk to your twin. How's your twin dealing with you being an Olympian? Because there's no real one-upmanship when it comes to that. You've set a pretty high bar that can never be matched.
Yeah, finally. Like, she's 6 minutes older. She's a qualified lawyer. She's given my parents and, you know, grandkids. Like, you know, it's been very hard to keep up with her. But, she's just super proud. Like, they say, you know, because you're a twin, are you extra competitive? And we both would be competitive, but we'd never be, like, against one another. Like,
yeah,
I don't want her to do really well. And maybe I say that because she knows that I'd always beat her, but... Yeah, we're just super competitive, like super. Like, we did a bleep test in school. Like, we used to do it every few weeks, and it would always be myself and my twin sister Rachel at the end, and she'd just look over and be like, "There's no point. There's no point," because I wouldn't give up. But yeah, no, she's super proud, and I think even today, like getting the t-shirts and the kit collection, you kind of. Like, you know, family care, but you don't realize actually how proud they are. Like, even my brothers, you know, be all over social and like, oh, someone, you know, mentioned you in this. And you're like, how do you know this? Or like, they're getting up to watch all the races, and it doesn't matter, like, if they're on at 2 a.m, like, they're all so interested and so proud. And that's just like mind blowing.
Yeah. And maybe now more than ever important to know that, because while the Olympics is a huge deal for you, it would have been a huge deal, I'm sure, for your family as well, who would have been planning on going to Tokyo and being there on the finish line, and that not being possible, knowing actually that they are still going to be able to enjoy it and still be together and feel that support, even though you're going to be thousands of miles away.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they've ordered some bunting and flags and all sorts of stuff to throw up outside the house, and like the triathlon's on at 6 a.m. Tokyo time, so God knows what time it's going to be. I think 2 a.m. here, but I know they'll all be up and they'll have like a big party. And yeah, I mean, they'd love to be there. And as you say, it's a very different games not having support, but I think you know, Team Ireland have prepared us really well for that. And one of the sponsors indeed are doing a traveling roadshow, so you know, when the hockey team were playing, they'll try and have some of the families, or now the rugby sevens have qualified, and you know, the same with triathlon, if they're in your area, they'll try and get the home advantage and bring it to Tokyo. So yeah
we're going to be doing a lot of work with Indeed as well, and talking to some of the families. And I definitely want to check in with your family now and check in with your parents, because they seem to have given you like an incredible grounding. You know, we talk about how you become a successful sports person, and you know, streaming and a lot of people play just one sport from such a young age. Like, geez, they seem to have a good sense of balance for your lives and what was important. And, you know, even rather than a lot of families where the punishment might be you can't watch the Champions League unless you've done your study, actually saying, you know, take a break, come enjoy this.
Yeah. Listen, they're great. I mean, my mom was gas. She wouldn't run for a bus at all. Like, she'd just say, we'll get the next one. But she's definitely like, and Christmas would be her Olympics. But she is like,
Christmas is her Olympics.
Absolutely, like, tries on it. But she is an armchair Olympian. Like, she watches everything. Like, she stayed up to watch the golf for the weekend, all the tennis, the rugby. Like, she's Leinster born, supports Munster. That's another story.
Yeah, right.
There's a Dubs flag outside the house for the football. But yeah, and family are great. Like, even when you think you've done something good, like, family are great at bringing you back down. Like, you know, no notions in our family. So yeah, it would be great if you did talk to them. It'd be great. And they're in Newcastle West, so it's a fine part of the country.
It certainly is. So she'd be like the rest of us then watching the Olympics and say, when the diving comes on, within 10 minutes, you're an absolute expert and you're outraged at some of the scoring.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think she has even written to Stuart Barnes after the Lions tour when he was given out about Keith Earls. She was just like, if that was an English player now. So she pinned him a strongly worded.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so we better all be careful about what we're saying when we watch the triathlon then.
Yeah, yeah. Marie Hayes, she won't run after you, but she'll get you in other ways.
So talk us about the last 9-10 years then, from first starting out in that triathlon journey to ending up as an Olympian. It's clearly something that you found very comfortable straight away.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a zigzag path. I took it up in medical school. I thought it would be really, really smart, you know, to have a bit of an outlet, because I knew the studying would be intense because you're condensing 6 years into 4 years. And then obviously I started working as a junior doctor then. So any training I was doing kind of got parked a bit. And then after that, I joined my training group, Pop-Up. And I remember coming up and meeting like Scavin Noble is an Olympian, and I'd never met an Olympian. Mm. So like, how do I even talk to this person? And then my coach, Aina McGrath, he'd asked, you know, what do you want to do? So like, they gave me a training program, but it was just, you know, maybe to be really good nationally. And I had some results. Like I have 11 or 12 national titles at this stage. And, you know, that's thanks to them. So then I was doing the training and trying to work and stuff, and I figured if I wanted to progress in training, I just had to, you know, go all in. And I'm very much an all or nothing person. And, you know, if I'm doing something, I'm doing that 100%. So I upped sticks from Limerick and I moved to Wicklow. And I'm able to live with a family, Liam and Yvonne Williams and their daughter, Laura. And I mean to say, when you're coming home to a family environment versus coming home to an empty house, you know, that's cold or there's no food in the fridge, is a massive difference. So they're a huge reason of how I've managed to progress and be successful. And even during COVID, like,
right,
when the Olympics was postponed, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have nowhere to live. You know, I kind of told Liam and Yvonne I was only going to be here until 2020. And like, the first thing Yvonne is like, don't you be worrying now about that. I told you, you're here to go to the Olympics and we support you the whole way. And like, some days you come in from training and like, it's not always great. You know yourself, you're an athlete, you train for a triathlon, and the sessions don't always go great.
So I think you're giving a lot of credit there now somehow.
So to come home and to have someone to just, you know, either tell you to get over yourself or, you know, to give you a hug. And even coming home from racing, coming home and they'll be up to welcome you. It's just, I have a lot of good people helping me. So to say that, you know, I've gotten here on my own or just because I train hard, I've had a lot of things align. Like, I have a great coach, a great home support, and I have two families, so I'm just lucky.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a good base there. All right. You're doing your medical studies then, and you're using this as an outlet. And, you know, as you mentioned, I think the last time you spoke to us, we were doing our triathlon. And it should be pointed out that, you know, we did the triathlon in Dunmore East, that big hill that you haven't done because, you know, it's pretty steep and you're not quite ready for that yet. But we did that down there. But I was amazed when we went out to our first session in UCD and the more elite level athletes. and talking to the coaches, and oh, they did their cycle and their swimming this morning, and now they're doing like a 15K warm-up run. What time are they here? Oh, they're here about 6 a.m. and they'll do their 700-800 meters of a swim, and then, you know, they might do a 20-30 kilometer, 40-kilometer cycle straight after that, at least before they go, quite often before they go to work, and then we'll come back and do their run. Like, as an outlet to get away from the intensity of the study around your medical studies, it's a difficult enough outlet. There's a commitment required.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And God, when you say it like that. But the people, like, all triathletes, like, I have so much respect for everyone who's racing nationally and doing, like, age group and doing the elite level, because, like, they have families and, you know, they're managing work and things like that. Like, I wake up in the morning, I don't have to worry about me, you know, like, and getting to the pool and stuff. But, yeah, I think you just... you have to be super organized. And I always was. Like, I'd get up at 4:15, 4:30 and get my study done. Or if I had stuff to prep before going to work in James's, you know, I'd have it done. And you arrive onto the ward at 7:30, and you maybe like that. You've been up and you've had your swim done, or you're running along Clontarf, like, pitch black, hoping someone doesn't catch you. So yeah, you just need to be organized. But I always found that when I did the training before work or before study, it just enabled me to be able to perform better at my job or in the exam. Like, I remember I did my undergraduate in physiology in Trinity. So we used to do our exams in Simmons Court. And I'd get up and I'd do my run in the morning. And I remember housemates saying, do you not need to cram? Like, cramming is great. I'm like, lads, if I don't know it now, like, that's it. I'm never going to know it. And so you go in and you're just centered. So yeah, there is a commitment, but it definitely benefits both study and work.
Mm. When did that balance of study and work and training become too difficult to balance?
When I realized that I could go to the Olympics. So probably after the test event. I mean, I was working as an SHO, so a senior house officer, and then an opportunity came up to be a clinical tutor in anesthesiology with the University of Limerick. So that meant that I could work, you know, 2.5 days flexi time. I could do some research and then train full time. So, and then I stepped away from the clinical side of medicine when COVID hit, obviously, to train full time, because I don't think people realize, like, you're doing 30-hour training weeks. And, like, now I'm swimming in the National Aquatic Center and I live in Wicklow. So, you know, that's a 110-kilometer commute and all these things add up. So I'm lucky that I have, like, Renault Ireland have supported me since medical school, actually. They've been through graduation, first win of a triathlon, and now they're going to see me become an Olympian. So they've been incredible. And so I have a car to go wherever I need to go. And to become an Olympian, it's all consuming. And I definitely just had to step away from work, I'd say, completely in the last 8 months. And just,
right.
And it's totally been worth it. Totally.
Would your personality have changed? And maybe when we get a chance to talk to your family, they might answer this, but when you made that decision, or that realization dawned on you that, you know, I actually can be an Olympian, I'm at that level now, if I put my full focus, I can get that qualification. Would you have changed, you feel, as a person, as an athlete, when you had that sole focus on that goal?
I don't know that I've, like, changed, you know, like, someone with bipolar, you know, I'm on and I'm off.
Yeah.
I was always very committed and driven to be the best I could be. And I think that the realization, in order to be able to become an Olympian and to cement a place in the Olympics, that I had to give it 100%. And, like, I got to the point where I was willing to do whatever it takes. And that's probably, I would be, my personality type suits that. Like, I'm happy to be told where I'm going, what I'm doing. And, like, my training schedule changes daily. Like, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow. I know I'm swimming in the morning, but I don't know if I'm biking or running. And that's fine, because I'll do whatever needs to be done.
Right. So
you can't make plans really to meet family, and they're incredibly understanding, or, you know, like, meet your friends for coffee, because actually you might have a 4-hour bike that you didn't know you had. But I think as soon as I committed to the goal, like, I was just all in. So yeah, everything else is at the wayside, and it's just head down, and everyone who knows me gets that, and they're totally understanding and accepting of the fact that I haven't seen them once.
Yeah.
I hope I see friends after this.
that mentality of, you know, maybe not quite knowing what tomorrow is going to bring probably served you well over the last year or even 18 months with the initial postponement of the Olympics, and even up to recent weeks, the constant questions as to whether the games are going to happen, and not letting your mind get taken over with the worry of, I put all this into it over the last years and now it might be taken away from me.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's uncertainty, like, in everything you do in life. But I think when you put it like that, you know, the global pandemic, and the one thing that you've sacrificed everything for, you know, might get cancelled. Even up to, like, what, 2 weeks ago, they're still talking about, will the Olympics go ahead? So you just have to kind of park it, and, like, whatever about my personality being strong, like, my coach is an absolute saint. Like, I don't know how he puts up with me, honest to God, I really don't. And, like, lockdown have been his only point of contact. Like, we've seen each other every single day for the last nearly 3 years. We've probably fallen out once, but only for a small
what was that about?
Something stupid. He probably told me to do something that I thought I couldn't do. Like, if your coach has to do something, you're doing it. Definitely having him there. And whenever I would have doubts, or I think that I'm not good enough, or, you know, am I doing the right thing? You know, he's there to steady the ship and say, look, your numbers are your numbers. And, like, I trust him completely. So, you know, when he says jump, I just go, how high? And I think when you find a coach, and you can have that kind of athlete-coach relationship where I never need to question what I have tomorrow, because I know whatever I'm doing tomorrow will be the most appropriate thing to make me better and to give me a performance. So even, like, in Lisbon, when I got the second place, like, I was thrilled, but I was more just happy for my coach because of all the work he put in. You know, everyone says well done to the athlete, but they forget that there's been someone telling the athlete do. And even having him at the racing makes an awful difference, because, you know, he sees things that I don't see, or in triathlon, as you know, being a triathlete yourself, you to pick pontoon positions, and, like, he'll assess the course, tell me where I should go on the pontoon, so I don't need to think of that. He'll tell me, you know, to pick the best line, and again, I don't need to think about that. So, like, we just, the two of us we're probably quite similar in personalities, and everything's meticulous and perfect. But when he's there, I don't need to worry, because I know he's done it all for me and I just need to perform. So, yeah, I think you need good people.
Yeah, you mentioned Lisbon there and the silver. I think the first time since Aileen Reid back in 2013 that a Irish female triathlete had got on the podium. So the form is good. The form is very, very good. 12 seconds behind double Olympic medalist Nicola Spierig of Switzerland. So what are the expectations then for just under 4 weeks' time and going to Tokyo?
Expectations will be high. I mean, it was always about just making Olympics, and now I'm going there and, you know, I want to be competitive, and, like, my goal would be top 10 or better. And I know if I can just get there, have a good bike, that I can run with the best of them. And I'll be, what's it my sister says to me, respect them, but fear none of them. So I'll be going with that mentality. Like, the Irish, and even after Lisbon, like in Leeds, there was a very different, mood around the athletes. Like, suddenly everyone's talking to the Irish athlete, you know, you're not just in the back. So Yeah, no one.
Right.
So it's great. Yeah, I'm going brimming with confidence, and hopefully form will be good. And I mean, it's a one day event. It's a one off race, and anything can happen. So I'll just give it my all.
And the games themselves, obviously, going to be such a different experience because of COVID. And even, you know, you've got to a holding camp. I don't think you can hang around really afterwards. Where, you know, one of the things that I always remember in 2012 at London was once the athletes were finished, like then the party properly started, and you'd see them at all the different events, and the Irish supporter base grew all the time. So unfortunately, that's not going to be there. Is that something you've just come to accept? And, you know, I'm here to do a job more than actually maybe savor the environment I'm going to be in.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100. I think we knew quite early on that was the way it was going to be. And if Tokyo was going ahead, it would be a game like, you know, games like no other. So I think it would have been nice to have that experience, meet all the other, like, I don't even know if we're going to get to mix, you know, with other athletes and different events, you know. We have a huge team going from Team Ireland, and everyone's going out at staggered times, and with all the you know, the isolation and the bubble scenario and the repeated testing, you know, it will be very different. But I'm just, yeah, super excited. And as you said, you know, I'm, while you're going, and it's all about the experience, you have to remember, like, you're going there to do a job as well. You're there to perform for your country, and I don't think there's any greater honor than that. So yeah, I'll be there to give my all.
Yeah, once an Olympian, always an Olympian, and that's the main thing. Caroline, it's been brilliant to talk to you. The very best of luck over the next month. We'll be getting up, or we'll be staying up, whichever it is.
Come, stay up.
we'll stay up for a late start for the triathlon. And yeah, can't wait. Very best of luck to you, and I really enjoy it. We'll chat to you when you get back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully I have a few stories, good ones. Thanks a million.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.